As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Laz and Powers. This is Scott Powers, again joined with Mark Lazarus. We are still in Nashville.
I think I live here now, Scott.
Yeah, I think you do too. It's been almost a week for you.
I've been here since like 9, I think I landed at 9:30 in the morning last Sunday.
You'll be here until tomorrow.
You know how there's some cities you just can't be in forever? Like Vegas, it's like a 3-day max.
Yeah.
With 900 hockey writers in town, Nashville needs a 3-day max because I've had too much bourbon, Scott.
I have been an adult, and I've been very proud of myself.
I have been an adult. I've been drinking adult beverages the whole time. You know, it's funny, though, because...
Like, I've been a disciplined adult.
That's what I have been disciplined. It's funny to watch it every night. Like, I've been, you know, out with... There's nothing I love more than just talking shop with other hockey writers, right?
Yeah.
So we've been, you know, either whether it's in the hotel bar or out on Broadway. Like, I've been out past 2 a.m. every night I've been here. And I've not been drunk once.
Wow.
And I've been drinking the whole time.
Your tolerance is really high.
No, it's not that. You just get like a nice, like that's the beauty of liquor, man. Stop drinking beer. People should stop drinking. Beer is awful. It makes you feel bad. You have to drink like 900 of them.
I'm pretty sure that alcohol in general is at least...
No, liquor is healthy. Liquor is healthy. Listen up, kids. Healthy. Drink more liquor. You just have a nice sip and drink. Like an old fashioned, you nurse it for a while. You just enjoy it. And you don't get drunk. And you wake up and you don't feel hungover. I'm telling you.
Yeah, this might just be you too, because I'm not sure this is the case for everyone. Because
Scott, like I said,
people are waking up throughout drinking liquor. Like Mark said, I would not get hungover. What is going on?
I have been in Nashville too long. That's clearly.
Yeah, I've been in my room and I just hanging out because I know myself better that I can't just sit around and talk and not have enough. So, I know where my.
So Connor Bedard is 3 years more than 3 years away from being able to legally drink.
Yeah.
He's still 17, Scott.
He's officially a Blackhawk, too,
if you haven't seen.
How quickly did the Blackhawks put him to work yesterday? I mean, that kid was just doing circles.
It was like an hour Instagram before posts. He even got to the press conference.
He was back today doing more Instagram posts. Yeah. And,
welcome to your new life, kid.
Yeah. He seems like he can handle it, though.
He really does, right?
Yeah. It's
That's the first time we've been joking that we're not going to actually get to talk to this kid until like November because it's all going to be press conferences and madhouses in Toronto and Montreal and stuff until things die down. But just from that, you know, 15-minute press conference yesterday, he has all the right answers. He just seems chill about all this stuff. Didn't seem overwhelmed at all. Like some of these kids, they come in and they're like, you know, they're so overhyped, they're giggling about it, or they're just terrified staring into a camera. He looked so calm and comfortable up on that giant podium and just, you know, cracking jokes and smiling and saying all the right things. I mean, that's what
all
we heard
the top
draft.
I mean, you look at Fantilli and Carlson, all those guys are just, I don't know, they feel like they've been through this for the whole year, you know, like it's been the world stages and all this. So, yeah.
Well, they've also been paraded around by the NHL since like the start of the playoffs.
Yeah, no,
too.
The NHL have not.
They're at the end of like a world tour.
Other than Michkov, they've not held back on trying to push their stars.
Even Michkov, I popped in on Michkov's presser, and obviously he had an interpreter speaking, but he seemed pretty relatively comfortable up there too.
Yeah, no, it's I stepped in there too because I found him the most intriguing prospect this whole thing.
Question. Like this was like the most boring draft of all time. There were no trades, nothing interesting happened. But Michkov, that was by far the most compelling.
Honestly, the Blackhawks were one of the more interesting teams. I mean, they're the ones that made a couple of trades. They may not even have any of the players they traded for, considering that Corey Perry may not sign and they buy out Josh Bailey. And yeah, but I mean, they also made other trades.
We're going to talk about Connor Bedard and all that. We got to talk about Corey.
We've talked about Connor Bedard.
We got to talk about Corey Perry.
Yeah,
the fact that Kyle Davidson is trying to sign Corey Perry. Now let's go through like the villains in Blackhawk fandom. Like old heads, it's Dino Cicerelli, probably more than anybody. That newer generation, it's like a whole bunch of blues like David Backes and Steve Ott, yeah. Right? There's Rafi Torres, who almost murdered Marian Hossa.
Yeah.
Who else? Like maybe
I feel like Corey Perry is a villain to a lot of teams.
He is. But oh man, do Chicagoans hate Corey Perry.
Yeah. And Kyle Davidson sort of brought up a point, like they probably hate him until he defends Connor Bedard, and then they're gonna love Corey Perry probably. Like I feel like this thing's a little. I don't. I just. I. It. It in a. I mean, I know it's a lot of fans that are still there, but I don't. It feels like a new Blackhawks team, and Connor Bedard is it. And if Corey Perry defends Connor Bedard, then he's gonna win over people.
If you can,
I don't think anyone's gonna walk away from the Blackhawks because they signed Corey Perry.
I know, I'm just kidding around, but if you could sign Daniel Carcillo after the 2010 final, can sign
true.
Anybody.
Yeah.
But it is funny, you know, people are mad at me because I on Twitter, cause I very clearly jokingly asked Kyle Davidson why he was willing to risk all this goodwill he's built up by signing Corey Perry, and people of course take that seriously because they don't have any sense of humor. But it'll be interesting because apparently, like other writers rave about Corey Perry. He's a great guy to deal with.
Yeah.
So hey, we got Nick Foligno is apparently a really great guy. Yeah. Bring them all in. Let's give all these old heads, get all the veterans.
Yeah, I mean, all these people that do. I mean, it's if you're bad or not bad on this, just more. Yeah, just what you do on the ice doesn't always dictate the type of person they interact with. So
I thought Ben Pope asked a good question today where he said, like, you know, I think a lot of fans are wondering why, you know, you cut ties with Taves and Kane because you wanted these guys to grow in, these young guys to grow into leadership positions, and now you bring in Nick Foligno and Corey Perry to play basically those same roles. And, Davidson had a good point, too, in return. It's like, it's different. Corey Perry is not going to walk into that room with the gravitas of a Taser Kane. Those guys sucked a lot of the oxygen. I mean, you know, I've made it clear. I think that they would be better off with Jonathan Taves or Patrick Kane helping Bedard along.
Yeah.
But I do understand. It is different.
I understand Taves not coming back more than I understand Kane at this point, I think. Because I'm not sure you can bank on Taves being on the ice or being out there.
He might not want to play anymore.
Well, I don't even know if it's about him wanting to play. I just, I don't know if his body will allow him to play. Yeah. So I don't think you can bank on Taves. And I think with Kane, it was more that they were concerned with people deferring to Kane, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure with Connor Bedard, it's a bad thing because you need, like, Kane is not a shoot first player still. Like, he's going to give you the puck back, so it almost teaches you where to go to space and stuff. But the Blackhawks obviously had their reasons with Kane and Taves. And I don't know if Davidson had that answer ready because he didn't really hesitate, but it felt like I'm sure he was hoping that Kane and Taves, like, I'm sure he hates to answer. I think both days he was asked Kane and Taves questions. I'm sure they're probably not going anywhere in that respect, but I don't know. I guess, you know, like, it feels like he's made a definitive decision on that, I'm not sure all the reasons that they have, or even the ones they're willing to discuss.
Oh, you know? I'm sure the 2010 of it all has something to do with it too. Just getting a completely fresh start for the organization, all that stuff. It's all justifiable. I'm not saying it's not justifiable.
It's just curious because I think a lot of people have had that same. You know, like, where I think they've had to Yeah, they'll continue happening.
You know what's been interesting is obviously much of the hockey world has been very upset that good things are happening to the Blackhawks, that they got Connor Bedard. They, you know, they fans will say that they probably should have lost draft picks after the Jenner and Black report, and you know, or Jenner and Block report, and you know that karma is clearly not real if the Hawks are getting this right away and like all this good news and stuff. But what's been interesting is I was talking to a couple of writers and they said the same thing. It's like, I'm starting to get pissed because the Blackhawks are starting to become likable again. And a lot of them are deferring about, you know, Kyle Davidson with his little man on the street interview he did, which was very well done, very funny. There was a little like wink at the camera. Like it was expertly done.
Yeah.
And he's carried himself very well throughout all of this. And Connor Bedard is an eminently likable young man and people want to see him do well. A big storyline we've been talking about for years now is how do the Blackhawks crawl out of this reputational hole they're in? And substantially, they have a long way to go.
Yeah.
They have to do all the things that they've said they're going to do, and we have to keep them accountable for that. But just having likable people in front of the camera softens it a lot, right? Like,
yeah.
it's you know, people want to see Connor Bedard succeed.
Well, I also think, not that this is Bedard, but I think that Davidson and Luke Richardson have both...
Richardson especially, too, yeah.
Yeah, just, it's not, you know, like, I feel like the organization has made some interesting decisions still around the Pride jerseys, and...
interesting's a good word for it.
But when we talked to... I thought the person who had the most forceful statements and the most understanding of the statements around the Jenner and Block was Kyle Davidson when I spoke to him for that story and understood about a lot of things that... that, you know, like, that they have to do on the hockey side. And I feel like he's been a driving force a lot of the hockey decisions around, you know, the mental, you know, the hiring the mental performance coaches. And then hire Luke Richardson, too, who's he's asked questions about things that obviously didn't happen under his tenure, but understands that, you know, what's important in this organization and things that he has to say. And certainly the way that he carries himself and the way he talks about mental health and the way that he just, you know, vocalizes. He's an old school coach in some ways that he's been around, but he's
got a very forward thinking.
Yeah,
style.
You know, there's like an optimism that, you know, it's more about building players up than breaking them down, yeah, sort of thing. So,
and then you got your Connor Murphys and like there's a lot to
like. I mean, day to day from a higher level, it's Richardson and Davidson who are going to speak the most. And and certainly disappointing that, you know, when the last time when the Pride stuff happened that, you know, that Danny Wirtz didn't speak. And, you know, I think those things are noticeable, but too. But I think the fact that you seem to have hired the right GM and the coach and, you know, and, yeah, I think those things, you know, they do have positive momentum, at least, yeah, you know, when you continue to, I mean, yeah, we continue to kind of hold them accountable.
Yeah, I think having GMs with personality, that's becoming a more important aspect to hockey almost, because they are really kind of the voices of the direction. So you look at like a you know, Conroy in Calgary now, yeah, and Briere in Philly, even someone like Kyle Dubas who can just sit there and speak thoughtfully about, you know, all kinds of issues and the process and everything like that. Like, you do need that. And Stan Bowman, love him or don't love him, was not good at that part.
Yeah.
Like, he did not convey excitement. It just wasn't his personality, yeah, at all. So I think, you know, Kyle's so loose and easygoing up there, and, you know, he cracks a joke and he's smiling and he's, you know, he just seems like he's on top of things, but also, you know, kind of not taking it too seriously sometimes. I it goes a long way.
It was interesting because Bowman was here in Nashville and he was spotted.
Yeah, I saw him last night.
He and certainly Quinville are positioning themselves for
they're starting that process. Yeah,
so we'll see where that goes. I still question whether either one should ever be in the league, and I think, you know, I think they have to answer a lot of questions, yeah, still, and I think they're, yeah, but yeah, the fact that they've been around and, you know, certainly. Yeah, I think people, they've spoke to enough insiders that, you know, like they're up for jobs and people are considering them, and they both have to speak to Gary Bettman and get clearance, but it certainly feels like
happening. I don't put much faith in the NHL to do the right thing here. The fact that Kevin Cheveld day off, just nothing.
Yeah.
Right? He was a grown adult in that room. He didn't go to the press. He didn't go to the police. He didn't go to HR. Nobody did in that room.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want any of those people running my organization. I wouldn't want them in charge of my young people. Honestly, I was talking about this with someone last night. I think the best thing that could happen, would send the best message, and this is the pipe dream of all pipe dreams. Like, this will never happen. But the NHL reinstates Joel Quenneville And then nobody ever hires him to do anything.
Yeah.
So, we don't want that part of our organization right now. That's the way you send a message in this.
Yeah. I don't foresee that happening.
You don't ban them. Yeah. You just don't want them.
Yeah.
But Mike Babcock's the coach of the Blue Jackets, so what the hell do I know?
Yeah. No. So.
You want to go through this list of guys here, or do you want to talk about Bedard more?
We can get in the draft stuff and certainly read Corey Provin and Scott Wheeler's information, because I mean they're a lot more insightful about this.
No, I've watched every shift of Martin Misiak.
Of Marcel.
Marcel. Remember Dwayne? He used to play basketball, I think, at Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I love those guys.
I thought the interesting part of today and the last few days has been about roster construction. It started with the Hall and Foligno trade, and obviously building around Bedard. It's also maximizing cap space and trying to weaponize it, which the Boston trade wasn't that, but I guess if you wanted Taylor Hall that bad and you basically got him for nothing.
The Islanders trade is a good example. You get Josh Bailey, you buy him out, and you get a second round pick for your efforts.
It doesn't feel like $5 million goes a long way. And part of it, and someone made a good point, where it feels like the team that has the cap space feels like it has less leverage than the team that's up against it, because I think they feel like a need, like we need to get, we have this cap space, so we need to find a way to get out of this where you, I think over time, the team that is running out of cap space, they get desperate, but it's the draft and these are the windows to do these type of things. So, David Davidson both years has put that space to work, and I think there's certainly, questions of how much more you can put that to work. And I think there were questions about the DeBrincat trade last year, whether they got fair value. But he's bringing in assets and he's right now, you can micromanage the cap and how much space they're putting to use, but they're gaining assets and overall,
well, what's interesting
getting done what they want to in the bigger picture.
Like the Bailey trade, like they're specifically wanting to spread these picks out, right? Yeah. And the Bailey trade, I think it's the third second round pick they have in 2026. And if you follow the timeline, like ideally you are spending those draft picks at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like that's when it's time to turn things around. It's like 2025, 2026, and they've got extra first round picks over the next few years. So like if Bedard does and Korchinski come in and it starts triggering the turnaround, 2-3 years from now, you have all these, futures assets where you can be on the other side of this. So stockpiling all these guys, it's not just about stockpiling talent. It's about stockpiling tradable assets in the future.
And that's the interesting part, where eventually this evolves to where, you start building a team for the present instead of, like all these guys, some of these guys aren't going to be here. Like, it's like 75% of the roster next season are going to be on contracts that expire within a year or two and probably won't be on this team beyond that. So, it was interesting, he explained to Caleb, Davidson explained to Caleb Jones' decision today and saying that we're going to, we want to have space for our young players. Yeah. And that probably means Kaiser and Korchinski getting opportunities to make the team out of camp. And next few years, you'll start seeing more of that, where Bedard will be in the lineup and Gutman and Reichel this next year. And, a few years from now, it could be Nazar and even... Oliver Moore, guys that could, probably spend a year or two in college and then turn pro. So, it'll be interesting to see how much of that, how they build that roster and then deciding if they ever need to spend money in free agency or go out and acquire, that next tier of talent, I suppose.
So, everyone knows everything about Bedard. Go read every story ever written in The Athletic. You'll learn about Connor Bedard. But tell us about Oliver Moore, who, Davidson was downright giddy about, it was over the top almost that they were able to get him. He's Corey Promin said he's the best skater in the whole draft, and you just put a story up on the site, go check it out, about that skating. You talked to his coach. Tell us more about him.
He was labeled the fastest the skater in this class, and I talked to his skating coach, Katie McDonough, from he works out within Minnesota, and She kind of talked about the whole process of breaking down his skating when he came in as a 10-year-old and kind of working backwards with him and getting him to a point where it wasn't just about trying to skate fast, but move his body in certain ways. And anyways, we kind of broke it down in the story. But I think I was talking to Corey Promin about where why he wasn't you know, maybe he dropped a little bit, and he thought that some of it's just the offense, where he produced decent numbers with the National Development Program, but they weren't, you know, astronomical. And you know, even I asked Katie about it too, and she thought that, you know, maybe that playing with players with more his speed could allow him to maybe facilitate some more offense. And and you know, even yesterday Mike Downey mentioned that, you know, him not being able to play on the top power play, that you know, maybe some of the production is there too. So I think that's the, you know, like, you can see him in the forecheck and the way that, you know, within these first three steps, like, he builds this incredible speed. Like, I put some clips in the story, and it really is, you know, how he just quickly can get across the ice, and you can see how he can you know, be that type of player. I guess the other thing is that when he, you know, you got Bedard, who's your number one center, and then they drafted Frank Nazar and, you know, Oliver Moore, who are both centers from the, you know, the U.S. program. And that maybe, you know, even Corey mentioned that maybe when they become successful, that maybe one of those guys is a winger. You know, they both have...
Lucas Reichel was a center, too.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, having that versatility, certainly, you know, the Blackhawks have talked about that, too. You'd rather have a guy who, you know, moves from center to wing, and then it's harder for wing to center. So I think they have an assortment of players that can do that. But, you know, if these guys, you know, we'll see again. All these, you know, even Mike Donahue, he said, you know, he's not going to assume that all these guys are going to make it. But when you start looking at where guys are drafted, and you start plugging them in potential spots, and all of a sudden you have Bedard and Reichel, and then maybe Nazar and Oliver Moore. And I think there's a couple guys even now within, you know, within the pipeline, guys like Ryan Green, who could be top six potential. And then next year, I still think, and I know fans want to accelerate this thing, but I think they're still going to be woeful next year in another top five pick. So I think defense is pretty much set, and, you know, going out and getting another goalie in this draft, and all of a sudden, you know, he's a little bit further back now, that Adam Gagnon, who I actually talked to at the combine, so that kind of worked out where I had a sit down interview with him. But all of a sudden, you know, the pipeline looks a little bit more full. You have a lot more possibilities. But the Blackhawks, you know, Davidson said that he was trying to move up to draft Oliver Moore earlier and couldn't get it to budge, and he fell to 19, so the Blackhawks were ecstatic. And then today they drafted, what was it, eight more forwards. So it's certainly went heavy on the forwards, and Davidson said it was just sort of a coincidence in that way, but it was certainly part of the pipeline that didn't probably have as much quantity as other positions. So it feels like, you know, when Davidson came in, he knew that he wanted to draft a lot of high-end talent, and, you know, not that all these guys will make it, but you can make some misses now when you have that many guys out there. So it's two interesting drafts. I mean, even, you know, I think Nazar, this will be a big year from him, you know, having coming off that surgery and really not really looking like himself. And, you know, I think there's a lot of hope him coming back and being that guy. And then Sam Renzel, you know, last year's first round defenseman pick too. You know, he's gonna be at Minnesota, actually playing with Oliver Moore, both at the University of Minnesota, so I'm sure that'll be a good place for the Blackhawks to stop and see players. So,
well, it's incredible. Like, you know, you're mentioning all these guys, and he could be a top six. Like, they have like 11 guys they think could be top six right now, and then they also have a million draft picks coming up.
Yeah,
this is how you build a contender, because they're not all going to hit.
Yeah,
you know, maybe Oliver Moore can't produce at the NHL level. Maybe Frank Nazar doesn't bounce back.
Yeah,
we don't know. But, you know, this is, you know, I was going through the list today.
I guess the other thing about that too is that you don't necessarily, like, once you have a Bedard and you have some guys that are, and I think you saw this with the Blackhawks of old too, is that not everyone has to be that elite level to be a good player, though, right? Like, you start just complimenting players with the right...
And you need a top nine in the NHL, not just a top six. So you look back, and last year they had 3 first-rounders, 2 second-rounders. This year, 2 first-rounders, 3 second-rounders, because they traded one of them. 2024, 2 first-rounders, 2 second-rounders. 2025, 2 first-rounders, 2 second-rounders. 2026, 1 first-rounder, 3 second-rounders.
Yeah.
That's how you do a rebuild. You know, I know Jim Nill won GM of the Year, but what Kyle Davidson has done... it's cynical, and it was ugly last year, and I didn't like a lot of what he's done, but you can't argue that this is the right path to success, as opposed to trying to retool on the fly and rebuild around the veterans. Like,
it also feels a lot different because they drafted the Bedard.
Yeah, if they had drafted Will Smith in this draft, it doesn't feel like this
right now.
That's luck. That's nothing but blind, stupid luck. Yeah.
Well, it's
beating the Penguins in the last week of the season.
No, yeah, and it's I guess the only way that I don't think it's luck is that he built a team that was going to be within that lottery, right? Like, it was that they had the odds enough that trading to Brinkett and, you know, getting rid of Kane at the deadline, all those things were designed, and you can argue that, you know, adding Domi may have been bad for them, you know, because they probably won too many games. So I feel like he tore it down to a point where they were in it, and then certainly had to get really lucky at the lottery. And now it comes down to, and I wrote about it yesterday, it's Bedard's going to be, whether he's the elite player that we think, that everyone thinks he's going to be, or a step below, like, he's going to be a really good NHLer.
What if he's like Richard Panik?
Yeah, that's a real problem then for the Blackhawks. On and off the ice,
I
think.
I don't know why that's the first name that
popped up. Yeah, I don't know why that's. I don't think he's going to be Richard Panik. But it's about getting the rest right. And I think Reichel, you know, like, I think he's
legit.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of question marks. And again, it's about the quantity, that you don't have to get them all right. But I think we'll have a better idea where the system's at. And at some point, yeah, I think the draft picks become, you know, leverage too for trade.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The two hardest things to get and the two most important things to get are a number one center and a number one defenseman. And in consecutive drafts, they've gotten the guys that they think can do that. You know, obviously goaltending is important, but Adin Hill just won a Stanley Cup. Jordan Binnington has won a Stanley Cup. Antti Niemi won a Stanley Cup. Like, you know, you hope you have a great number one goalie, but in the modern era, that's not how it works usually. You have a committee anyway. So the two hardest things to get, they've got them. And now it's just about, you know, moving the pieces around it. And if you didn't have Bedard, then maybe you needed Reichel to become that guy. And then the pressure's on Reichel to be more than maybe a 25, 30 goal scorer.
Well, I think if you don't have Bedard, then you start building like Carolina or someone where it becomes the depth of talent, right? Like you need some Mondesi's guys that hit like Reichel.
And then what is Carolina's problem? They don't have finishers. And that's why they've had trouble.
Well, it also feels like Carolina had the team this year and just got unlucky with injuries and stuff. Like they're
right. Well, they only had one or two finishers, and then when Pacioretty's out and Svechnikov's out, and then you know Tavo was out for a little bit, they just didn't have the finishers.
They
create all the offense and they don't score.
Yeah. Well, the Blackhawks need Bedard to stay healthy.
They sure do. Yes. So let's talk Adam Guyon, the goalie that they picked at number 35. I don't pretend at all to be an expert on goaltending, but I talk to goalie experts a lot because I'm fascinated by it. And it seems like we're going. The first thing I noticed when I checked out Corey and Scott's analysis of him is that he's hyper athletic. And that's not a word you hear with goaltending very often these days, because goaltending is supposed to be about technique and mechanics, and it's very mechanical and it's, you know, reverse VH and all that. I feel like in the last year or two, we're starting to go back to. Maybe not Dominic Hasek, maybe not Alex Stalock, where you're just like flying around the crease, but being a little less mechanical, because forwards have gotten so good and shooting has gotten so sophisticated that when you go up up against the post with your left shoulder, there's that like quarter of inch of space above your head. We're seeing that goal scored all the time. So all of a sudden, the mechanics and doing everything proper is not good enough to stop the puck. So you need a guy who can improvise.
Well, it depends on how big you are, because there are some big goalies.
Well, if you're like Vasilevsky,
I don't know. I guess it.
Guy in 6'3", 180 pounds, so he's a pretty big boy.
Yeah, no, he's.
But you need to be able to improvise that. We don't see that a lot from modern goaltending. I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that going forward, is having guys that can Marc-Andre Fleury it out there a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know. I still feel like there's a lot of goalies that are very mechanical, and for their size, that's all they need to be. So, like, I look across the league, and I guess you can see both. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a trend or if it's just that's what
this guy. You never saw Corey Crawford flopping around the crease, right? He was just in the right spot at all times.
Yeah. But, like, you look at Arvid Soderblom, and I don't know if he's tremendously athletic. Like, he's athletic enough, but he's got a lot of size to him. And so, I maybe it just depends on the body where Agonian's a little bit, I guess he feels skinny at this point a little bit, maybe. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, but they wear so much padding.
Yeah, this doesn't really matter. Yeah.
You can just go full Archie Irbe on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and honestly, with Gagne, it'll be interesting because he, I feel like goalie more than any of his position. You're basing it on what you're projecting to be, right? Like it just. It's,
well, yeah, this guy went undrafted last year.
Yeah, this is so. You know someone who was playing in the northern North American Hockey League. And blew up when he had a, you know, like he wasn't even supposed to play for Slovakia, got invited late and then got thrown in the ice, you know, not like it was in the third game or something. And he had this amazing performance against the U.S. and played really well. And, you know, he had a really good year in North American League. And now he's going back to the USHL and then he'll eventually go to Minnesota Duluth. But, I don't know. I guess I'm not the person. I guess Jesse Granger might be better for that, for the goalie question. But.
So then we go. Then we get to at the 44th pick. They picked the guy with the worst possible name you could possibly have, Roman Kantsarov. We need to convince him to change it like to Kantsarov or something. Like
we're gonna convince the people to change it.
Kantsarov. Oh God, he's 5'9".
Yeah.
So you got a Connor Bedard is 5'10" and 5'10" three quarters. Is that what it was officially?
5'9".
At the 5'9" and three quarters? No, I think it was 5'10" and three quarters. And Frank Nazar is not a big guy, and Oliver Moore is not a big guy, and now you got this guy's 5'9". There's some big men coming down later in the draft, some behemoths. But another skill guy, another guy with the compete and the speed. At, you know, obviously, you know, Luke Richardson and Kyle Davidson have a type. He's playing in the Russian Junior League, so he's a long way, I would believe, from. You know, maybe even coming over, but there's some intriguing stuff about his game. And then...
Oh, yeah, it's 5'9". And
is it 5'9"? Yeah, 5'9". Yeah. Oh, he's a failure. He's a bust. Total bust.
Donahue said that the Kantsarov... What, Kantsarov? How do you spell it?
Kantsarov. Just flat-out Kantsarov.
He said that his contract was... he has one more year left in this KHL contract.
He's in the MHL, right? He's not even in the KHL yet.
Yeah. So that's usually like the younger...
I've just heard he's a real clubhouse Kantsarov.
Just waiting to use that. it's... I think he said he had one more year left in his KHL contract, so maybe someone they try to bring over earlier, or they find... I don't know. There's some more to path. They want to get him out of Russia and not play in the KHL after that, or if he signs another KHL contract. But yeah, his set, you know, like the Blackhawks, it felt like for the most part they were going for players with size a little bit more today. But yeah, it sounded like his skill levels was high enough that
already. Yeah, the next pick was Martin Misiak out of Youngstown, the USHL. He's 6'2", 200 pounds, which is
Another Slovak
substantial
player.
for an 18-year-old.
He drafted two out of the first three picks.
Yeah, he's a teammate of Guyan's. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's
known him since he was 10 years old.
I texted Host and I told him that they had drafted two Slovaks in the second round, and he texted, Slovak power.
You're such a name dropper, Scott. God.
I did write a book with the man.
Go buy it. It was good. At 67, Nick Lardis. This is when I was starting to listen to music and rank it with
Strunk.
Because I was bored.
That's another story.
So this might be the first time I've seen some of these names. Nick Lardis, the left wing out of the OHL. 5'11", 168. That's a skinny guy. Tell me everything you know about him.
I was going to pull up...
I'm literally looking at Corey Brahman's analysis.
We pulled
here.
Up... As every year, we just asked Mike Donahue to run through all the guys. Yes, and he had a piece of paper, and at one point he had to flip it over because there were so many names on there.
Corey says, Lardis' skating and skill are both assets for the pro game, and he has some scoring touch, so that's always nice. His shot is his best weapon, is his threat to score from the dots. That's good, because he can make some plays, but I wouldn't call him overly cerebral. That's mean. That's just like, remember the guy, who was it they drafted in the seventh round last year? It was like this Finnish kid, he was like 6'9".
Riku Tohila?
There was some kind of scouting report on him where he was like, the whole scouting report said like, he's very naive, he's from a small town. And it's like, what is this scouting report?
Mike Donahue said last year he didn't know who the player was, he'd never seen him, but they took him because of a flyer. You know what I'm saying? and then he said the same thing about their seventh rounder this year, Peltonen,
maybe it was Donaghy who said that about that pick last year. Called him naive and from a small town. It was the funniest thing I've ever
heard.
Said
it with Peltonen, and he said, "I'll tell you guys again, like I did last year with Tohila. I've never seen him play, but Mikko Luma, he's got a thing for Finnish guys. He knows them pretty well. And Peltonen's a 6'3" left shot defenseman that can skate. He's practicing in La Liga right now with Karpat and probably play up and down between junior and Liga, but he meets our traits of skating, good size at 6'3", and competitive player.
Donaghy cracks me up, man. He's like, yeah. I keep saying he's like an extra in the town or something. He's got that really thick Boston accent. He's very funny.
Yeah.
Next, they took Yuri, is it Felkman? Feltzman?
Yeah. I don't know.
Swiss.
This feels pointless going
It does feel pointless, doesn't it? It's like we're trying to improvise this. It's like we're Mystery Science Theater 3000.
This is Corey Brahman's story.
All right, so we'll just go. He's a 6'4 center, so that's in size.
Yeah.
99, Alex Farron, the center out of Sudbury, 6'2", 205. Yeah. We're getting some big boys now. Now, wait for this guy. Marcel, everyone's favorite draft pick of the year. Left wing out of the Q. He's 6'4", 242 pounds.
Yeah,
That is a big fella. You're not supposed to be that large at 18. You're supposed to have more metabolism than that. But I can't wait to see this guy. I think I'm already obsessed with him. Then they drafted a Milton, which you don't see a lot of Miltons in hockey. Milton Oscarsson, 6'6", but only 216 pounds. I love Corey Promen's tears crack me up. Tier has a chance to play games. Like, that's like the ceiling of this guy is, I don't know, maybe he plays a game. I love the NHL draft. It's the most crapshoot of all time.
I wonder
Lazarus
if they had
a Pelton in the left-handed defenseman, the one defenseman they took all day.
Yeah, I wonder if the NHL, if they had their way, that they could draft kids later or not. Like, it's so much of the, like, you draft this guy and so little of them, like, you talk to them and you go see them play, but like you just hand them over somewhere else, you know? Like, at least in baseball, when you draft them this young, they go into your minor league system and they're playing, you know, A ball or whatever, or, you know, like, just it's.
I don't want to go on too weird a tangent here, but I was talking to a couple of our Canadian writers downstairs in the hotel lobby just a little bit ago, and the whole hockey system is the most fucked up thing in the world. Like, you know, if you're a football player, you go to high school and then you play in college. Mm-hmm. If you're a basketball player, you go to high school and maybe you go to college. If you're a baseball player, you go to high school and then you go to college or the minor leagues. Hockey players.
It also depends on what country you're from. Like you know. Like,
well, right, that's true. But like in North America, the way we do it for hockey is you leave home as a little boy.
Yeah.
You go live in someone else's house, and you're a professional athlete who doesn't go to high school anymore.
Yeah.
Like you don't ever go to high. You have tutors and stuff. Like, or sometimes you go to high school.
They go to high school for like partial
days.
But
they do not exactly part. Like they do not like all the like. Most of the kids that are being drafted right now in North America have not had anything remotely close to a normal childhood.
Yeah.
They are not fully functioning adults. It's why when a rookie comes in and he went to college for a couple of years, it's very different than when you're talking to someone who comes out of the juniors. Why don't they just invest the money from juniors into high school hockey?
Yeah. No, I think in some ways they're almost they have independence that other kids don't have. Like they know
for
how to
for better and for worse.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just but overall it's I don't. For whatever reason, they've you know like some of it's Canadian hockey. That's
it's just
the vise that you need to be a.
It's just the way it's done, so it's never going to change.
I guess Canada makes less sense than the U.S. because part of the problem in the U.S. is they don't feel like high school hockey is good enough around. Like you can't face.
Well,
good
same
enough.
Thing with Canadian hockey. It's not good enough, so they don't because they don't.
Yeah, but
it's
there's
not
enough,
a priority.
There's enough.
Nobody good plays high school hockey in Canada. You play in junior, or you play in junior B, or you play in the Alberta junior hockey.
I feel like that's because they've made the system where,
yeah.
But like in high school hockey in the U.S., it feels like there's not enough talent.
There's not enough rinks.
Yeah,
in some cases.
Yeah, but at least in Canada, I think if you had kids stay in their regions and stayed where they lived and their parents, like you'd be able to create pretty good teams
and
leagues.
This is what I'm saying. Like Scott, they trade children. Like 15-year-olds get traded and sent to other provinces. It's insane.
Yeah, no,
it is an insane system, and it does not produce fully functioning adults.
You know what's funny?
And then you have a lot of these guys that come in, all of a sudden they're fabulously rich, they don't know how to tie their own shoes, they don't know where to buy groceries, and it's a recipe for trouble.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember I was walking with Johnny Oduya and talking about it because he went over to the OHL or the Q or something out of Sweden and you know, I was like, just having a child myself, we went on to send my kids somewhere when I was so young, and he's like, I was, you know, like 16, 17, like I don't know, like I feel like in different countries and different places, they just feel like the responsibility given to them is different than it is.
I guess.
But it's funny. Adam Ghanian, actually, when I sat down with him at the scouting combine, he had before he went to North America this year from Slovakia. He had gone to Finland, and they don't really have a Billa program there. And he said they sort of created one for him because he was like one of the younger players that play in Finland. And he said the house that he lived in was the woods. And he sort of had to walk through in the woods. And he said when his parents dropped him off, that his parents were like, I'd be kind of scared if I had to walk here from the woods and stuff. But he said it was they're not used to having billets in Finland, that it wasn't as structured like in the U.S. where a lot of the families do this continually. So right. that they have, you know, like they have systems in place and, you know, like rules and whatever. But yeah, he said in Finland it was really messed
up. I just keep coming back to that. My oldest daughter is 11 years old. And the idea of her leaving home and going to live in some stranger's house 3 years from now is just absolute insanity to me.
Yeah.
That's what Patrick Kane did. He went to go play for Honey Baked in Michigan from when he was 14. He lived with Pat Verbeek, of all people. Like, it's just, it's such a weird, and it's only hockey. It's like, it's like being like an Olympic gymnast where you're a professional athlete at age 12.
Yeah.
That's kind of what junior hockey is. These junior hockey players, they're basically professional athletes. It's their job. And people are paying good money to see them in big arenas. Like, that is...
I think if you dug into the soccer, like, you'd find out even more...
Oh, soccer's pretty messed up, too.
Especially internationally, where these they're going to the, you know, the...
I don't know. As a parent...
academies now and stuff.
The older my kids get, and the more I realize, like, what they're... Like, there are 11-year-olds right now, kids my daughter's age, who are training for the Olympics, like, 19 hours a day.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Is it 19 hours a day?
19, Scott. Anything less, and you don't get to go. Anyway, sorry, the tangent, but... Yeah, so these are, you know, Corey Pronman gave the Blackhawks an A+. I'm pretty sure that's because they got Connor Bedard, but the other guys might work out too. One of them's 250 pounds. It'll be fun to watch. Love the NHL draft.
Yeah, it's it's interesting now because I'm you know, after, I guess, putting the prospect rankings
together, these guys go right into your wheelhouse now.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. It's fun to kind of see where they all
come. I want weekly updates on the 250-pound kid.
I feel like you're just being mean to him now.
No, I don't mean he's fat. It's just he's probably jacked, man. He's probably ripped. Like, that is, I mean, he's what, 6'3"? Is that what it was? 6'3", 240? That guy
Mike Donahue killed me. Said about him, let's see, it was Marcel, is that the one?
Yeah, and don't forget, Dustin Byfuglien was a big boy. That worked out just fine.
He's a bigger kid. He's 6'4", almost 6'5", 240 pounds, but he gets around the ice really well. He played in the World Juniors. He was very successful there as a winger, so he fits our profile and he brings some size to the table.
You want mean? This is Corey. I didn't see much hockey sense or speed in my viewings. That's so mean. I didn't see much hockey sense. He's kind of dumb out there.
You know what's funny is people, they get like angry like the fifth or sixth round. Like, the people have these great opinions about someone who has so little chance to make the NHL, but you're like, I had this guy. You know,
it's I read one paragraph about this guy 8 months ago and then just made it my entire personality.
And these kids are kids are all teenagers, you know? Like,
they're
children.
Yeah. They're literal children. Yeah. Connor Bedard is a literal child. He's 17 years old.
Yeah.
This is so weird. That's my favorite viral tweet that goes around every year is like, I'm here for the boy auction or whatever it's called. Anyway, these are happy times for the Blackhawks. You know, there's a lot of hope and optimism. They're going to suck this year. Like you just said, they're going to suck this year. But it's just not going to matter that much because there's so much good vibes happening right now after a couple of years of, you know, I know everyone says they just won the Cup 8 years ago. Yeah, but a lot's happened since then.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of bad stuff happening. And it is kind of nice, you know, even objectively speaking, just to have upbeat, positive things to write about.
Yeah, and I mean, you can sense with, I mean, obviously, Connor Bedard changed everything for the fans, but the fact that you are going to have younger players and more players, that's going to be part of the future.
It's going to be exciting to watch.
And even like Taylor Hall, and I think some of these players playing with Bedard and playing.
Taylor Hall won the MVP just, you know, a handful of years ago.
Yeah, and, you know, like seeing where Reichel's progression goes. And yeah, no, it's going to be an interesting season.
Like, after last season, there's like, you know, that's kind of what I wrote the other day. There's a lot to cling to now, there's things to, like, get excited about, and that's cool.
Yeah. Did we talk about the schedule the other day? I don't remember what we talked about.
We probably did.
Is that what they had? I don't even know.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty, I mean, it's not a very good schedule if you ask me, but I guess.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't even remember what day we recorded now and like what day the schedule came out.
I think it was the same day, actually. Actually, no, it might have been the day before, but yeah, like Blackhawks open with a 5-game road trip.
Yeah.
And they have 2 games at home in all of October. Way to capitalize on momentum, NHL. Way to get Chicago excited. So by the time he finally gets to play in Chicago, they'll be like 0-9. And some of the bloom will be off the rose already.
Yeah. I think the season tickets, though, have skyrocketed.
Oh, my God. They're opening with, what is it, Pittsburgh, and then Boston, and then Toronto, Montreal, and then they're home against Vegas, and then they're out against Colorado. I mean, it is a brutal start to the season.
No, for sure. Yeah, they could be out of it after the two.
Good luck, good luck, Arvid.
They're just going to put Mrazek out there the first few weeks.
Just, it's just starting like 12 straight games. Yeah. You know your job here, buddy. So we'll probably be dormant for a little while here because the Hawks are not going to do anything in free agency. They've made all their moves through trades, basically.
Probably, yeah.
So we might, we're going to go off to our cottages up in northern Ontario, which you automatically get once you become a hockey writer. And yeah, we'll still be writing all summer, though. We still have to earn those paychecks.
Yeah, development camp is next week. They're off the ice, but we'll do some. I'll do some
features. Yeah, some of the guys will be talking, and you know, some of the picks from last year. You get updates on how they're doing.
Yeah.
And yeah, enjoy a positive, happy summer.
Yeah.
Dreams of Connor Bedard in your head.
I'm Mark Lazarus. I'm Scott Powers, and this is Lazarus and Powers. Talk to you soon.
And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit.